A failed referendum on Indigenous issues in Australia, a changing of the guard in New Zealand, finalized COFA negotiations, and more. Today is Thursday, October 26, 2023, and welcome back to Pacific Airwaves, a podcast on the Pacific Islands from the Southeast Asia Program and the Asia Maritime Transparency Initiative at CSIS. I'm Monica Sato.
And I'm Andreka Natsaligawa.
Andreka, we're now pretty far into fall and it's been getting so cold in DC. I've lived here for years and my Filipino self is still adjusting to the cold weather. By the way, are you planning to do anything fun for Halloween?
You know, I'm not sure of my plans yet. When you get to my age, these things just aren't as fun.
Andreka, we're the same age. Anyway, I'm going to be dressing up as the one and only Claire Savitz.
Who?
The food writer, gourmet makes host. Are you serious? I'm an intern certified foodie and amateur baker, so I'm pretty confident that everyone will know who my choice is.
I guess.
Well, I thought you were pretty caught up in all things internet, but alas.
Well, Monica, while you've been on the internet, I've been spending my time reading up on what's happening in the Pacific.
Anyway, starting off on our news. As listeners may recall, we released our last episode right as Pacific leaders landed here in D.C. for the second U.S. Pacific Islands Forum Summit. President Biden unleashed a charm offensive, starting with an announcement that his administration is asking Congress for $200 million in new assistance to improve Pacific states' infrastructure and readiness for natural disasters. He also unveiled $10 million in funding through the Quad for Maritime Domain Awareness.
During the summit, the United States recognized the Cook Islands and Niue as independent states for the first time and revealed plans to establish official diplomatic ties. Both countries are in free association with New Zealand, but they've recently been expanding their relations with other states. And on the security front, the United States pledged to dedicate a Coast Guard cutter entirely to collaboration and training with Pacific Island nations. Pacific Islands Forum Secretary General Henry Puna said that being at the summit was like a dream come true. But he also said that time will tell if the United States will follow through on its promises.
A couple of Pacific leaders skipped the summit. Solomon Islands Prime Minister Manasseh Songavare said that he didn't want a lecture from the United States, given recent actions to deepen his country's relationship with China, and that issues at home were more pressing. Sato Kilmen of Vanuatu also didn't attend because he needed to be in Parliament for a no-confidence vote, which he later lost. We'll have to wait until 2025 to see if the next summit is better attended.
Another topic during the summit was the U.S. Marshall Islands COFA negotiations. Negotiators finally announced an agreement on October 16th, after the economic provisions of the compact had already expired on September 30th. The current agreement will last for 20 years, and it provides the Marshall Islands with $2.3 billion of economic assistance. That includes $700 million for Marshallese, who are affected by American nuclear testing during the Cold War. Now the compact just needs legislative approval by the Marshall Islands legislature and the U.S. Congress.
And good luck with that.
Moving down under to Australia, on October 14th, they held a national referendum called The Voice to Parliament. The referendum would decide whether to recognize Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island people in the Constitution and give them a greater voice in Parliament.
The referendum failed with all six states rejecting the proposal and 60% of the public voting no during the national count, which was viewed as a setback for efforts towards reconciliation with the nation's first peoples.
While already disappointing to some within Australia, the no vote may hurt credibility for Australia on the world stage, specifically among Pacific nations.
In advance of the vote, Pacific Islands Forum Secretary General Henry Puna mentioned that, while the region respected the domestic nature of the referendum, a yes vote would have boosted external perceptions of Australia in reconciliatory efforts with their Indigenous peoples.
And speaking of voting, New Zealand also held an important general election on October 14th. One that flipped the leadership of their parliamentary body from Chris Hipkins and Jacinda Ardern's Labour Party to the New Zealand National Party, led by Christopher Luxon. Prime Minister Hipkins conceded on election night, which effectively ended 6 years of the Labour Party's rule and saw the worst defeat for an incumbent government under the country's mixed-member proportional voting system since its establishment in 1996.
While arrangements on the coalition have yet to be finalized, the National Party is expected to align themselves with the Libertarian ACT Party. We will also be waiting for Prime Minister-designate Luxon to announce the members of his cabinet, which probably won't happen until the official election result comes out on November 3rd. Though he has expressed his intent to have Nicola Willis, the National Party's finance spokesperson, serve as his finance minister.
While this changing of the guard has wide-ranging implications, at the forefront is decisions regarding defense spending. During election campaigning, both Labour and the New Zealand National Party promised to increase spending, specifically to combat China's growing presence in the region.
but it remains to be seen exactly what that looks like. Another priority is the decision on how New Zealand will choose to deal with climate change. Both parties once again paid lip service to the issue during campaigning. But since the National Party took the lead, they have said very little about what concrete policies are to be put in place and are unlikely to do so until a coalition is solidified.
While climate change and defense are overarching issues that will contribute to how New Zealand engages in the Indo-Pacific, many experts attribute the loss of the Labour Party to issues such as increased cost of living, COVID-19 pandemic policies, and the like. So it'll be interesting to see how this new government balances all these issues on their plate.
Moving towards Melanesia, in last month's episode, we touched upon the Melanesian Spearhead Group, or MSG, refusing to add the West Papuan Independence Movement as a full-fledged member.
Following the MSG summit, Indonesia canceled a regional meeting regarding the human rights situation in West Papua, stating that other Melanesian leaders were not going to attend the meeting.
Some local leaders across Melanesia expressed their disappointment, as the West Papuan Independence Group has a lot of support from the local level in these countries.
And it's a continued indication of Indonesia's growing influence in the Pacific, and the cost that some Melanesian leaders are willing to pay in order to become closer to Jakarta.
But another Melanesian independence movement is having better fortunes. In New Caledonia, the pro-independence leader Robert Shawi was just elected to the French Senate. Loyalist George Naturel was also elected. Meanwhile, the New Caledonian Electoral College rejected Sonia Bakes, who was Macron's favorite and a French government minister.
Shawi and Naturel won their seats with the help of a secret exchange of votes agreement. This allowed Naturel to emerge from the pro-France candidates, even though he was not endorsed by his own party. In the second round, Naturel's electors pushed Shawi ahead of Bakes.
This was a major victory for the pro-independence side, which had never seriously contended for the French Senate before. It was also a humiliating defeat for Bakes, who later resigned her post in the French government. I'd say the election result puts Macron in an uncomfortable position as he pushes to move past the Nouméa Accord.
Wow, all of that in 1 month? The end of the year is looking to be a busy one for the region.
And with that, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Pacific Airwaves. If you're looking for Pacific Waves, be sure to check out the daily news podcast from Radio New Zealand. Let us know what you think of our coverage by writing to our main email at searadio@csis.org.
And if you're not following us already, please subscribe or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite streaming platform.
Our producer is Marla Hiller. Special thanks to interns Josiah Gottfried and Yume Lin for their assistance with this episode. I'm Monica Sato.
And I'm Andreka Nataligawa.
And we'll see you next month for another episode of Pacific Airwaves.